Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Along with Jim Garrity of National Review, I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis today. A couple of those could potentially qualify in multiple categories, but we start with the one we're calling good, and this is from Politico, and it refers to how Hillary Clinton is defining who's privileged and who's not. On the debate stage Monday and on the campaign trail in North Carolina Tuesday, Clinton made a strategic shift to show her privilege as different from Donald Trump's. The Clintons came from nothing and lived the American dream. Trump, she said, was just born that way. Quote, Bill and I have been blessed. We didn't come from millionaire families. My husband's father died before he was born. Bill's mother taught nursery school in order to support him. They struggled. They worked hard. And America gave him the chance to get a good education, to pursue his dreams, and end up being president. Then you got David Axelrod chiming in, saying the suggestion that Fred Trump made Donald really seems to unsettle him, as we saw again last night. They are in his head. So, Jim, Hillary Clinton trying to make the case that she's not privileged or that she is somehow a more believable multi-millionaire than Donald Trump is probably not her best argument.
I was going to say, Greg, a lot of people forget that when they left the White House, they were dead broke.
That's right.
According to her own assessment. We really are harsh on Hillary Clinton sometimes, Greg, but we should give her credit. She earned all of those six-figure speaking fees from Wall Street firms, and every time a public university shelled out $225,000 to have her speak for an hour about why higher education was so expensive, every time she did that, she earned every last penny of that money. With that $14 million book deal, she earned it. Look, the idea that she's much more in tune with the plight of the working man and all that stuff. Look, Hillary Clinton hasn't been working class or struggled to make ends meet since the early 90s. And let's stop pretending that, oh, she's attuned to this and she and Bill get together around the family table. She has had people throwing giant amounts of money at her for being Hillary Clinton since about, you know, since her husband became elected president. And a lot of people would argue that a lot of the opportunities that came her way in Arkansas. Look, if you are the First Lady of Arkansas, there are a lot of law firms and a lot of people who are going to want to do business with you because of who you are and because of who your husband is. So neither one of these is really a particularly plausible candidate for this. The idea that she thinks she's going to draw some great contrast here, I think is encouraging. And I think it just kind of represents a certain amount of just epic willful blindness and inability to see themselves clearly on the part of the Clintons.
There is one potential good news here for you, Jim, because of your great fondness for Hillary Clinton. If being the generation that follows the ones who made all the money and Donald Trump therefore has no credibility, then I assume that transfers to Chelsea as well.
Oh, how dare you say that, Greg? She earned that NYU provost post. She earned that $600,000 a year part-time gig at NBC News. She earned being the South by Southwest keynote speaker. She's Chelsea Clinton. She's America's princess. It's always been something that's stuck in my craw. And the idea that the Clintons are going to run around and say that, you know, oh, don't for Trump because he's too privileged. I mean, we're talking about the woman who is the richest 1% of the richest 1% and the most influential woman in American politics for the past three decades. So, no, I'm not buying that.
All right. Well, sticking with Hillary Clinton, but moving on to the bad martini now. The mainstream media is very, very excited, from Politico to the Washington Post on down, that John Warner, the longtime former Republican senator from the Commonwealth of Virginia, has endorsed Hillary Clinton, saying she's prepared to be a world leader and the United States president. And he felt distressed by some of the comments made by Trump over time. And everyone's just so enthralled by the idea that a longtime Republican lawmaker would endorse Hillary Clinton. And as you point out in the lead for the Morning Jolt today, Jim, this should surprise exactly no one.
I'm going to go out on a limb, Greg, and say that if you find Ed Gillespie too extreme for you, too much of an incendiary bomb thrower, that wild-eyed, frothing at the mouth, maniacal Ed Gillespie, then you aren't going to vote for Trump. It's been a whole 2 years since the last time John Warner had a surprise endorsement of a Democrat. That was the 2014 Senate race in which he endorsed Mark Warner, who he had run against in 1996. Look, you know, as I laid out in the Morning Jolt, John Warner is not a down-the-line consistent conservative Republican, and he was never that guy. He was the guy who supported Roe versus Wade. embryonic stem cell research. He voted for the Brady Bill. He voted to extend the assault weapons ban. Voted against Robert Bork. I don't know about you, Greg. That strikes me as a pretty good measuring stick, a good litmus test. Voted against Clinton's impeachment. Broke with the rest of the party on Terry Schiavo. Was part of the Gang of 14 on the nuclear option. Co-sponsored a resolution opposing the 2007 surge of additional U.S. troops in Iraq. And he co-sponsored cap-and-trade legislation. The term rhino gets tossed around really casually, Greg. But I think when you look down that, you know, I think it's a much more plausible argument that if John Warner is in the Republican Party, he is one micron to the right of the center, or you know, in some cases, just flat out on the left. So it's not surprising. Yet I woke up this morning in Politico and everywhere else, it was like, there's this giant coup, and oh my goodness, can anybody believe that John Warner is endorsing Hillary Clinton? Yeah, I can believe it. And there are times where I think the media is very just flat out biased. I think there are also cases, Greg, where they just flat out don't know their history and haven't bothered to pay attention to these sorts of things. So all they hear is John Warner, former Republican senator, or maybe I should say, like, maybe I mean a lot when I say former Republican, is endorsing Hillary Clinton. It's not surprising. I think this will win her one more vote in the state of Virginia than she otherwise would have, Warner's. But she's managed to get a whole news cycle out of this.
If that's not crazy enough, let's move to Howard Dean. Howard Dean, of course, ran for president 12 years ago. Then he was, oddly enough, a fairly successful chairman of the Democratic National Committee, or either that or he was just a chairman during a time when the Republicans cratered around 2006 and 2008, either way. But he watched the debate along with 80-plus million other Americans on Monday night, and he was among those who decided not to listen so much to the actual content of the debate, but the way Donald Trump breathes. That was basically in through the nose, and a lot of people see that as sniffing or sniffling as he went along. And, well, he actually got a fairly tough interview on this from MSNBC's Kate Snow. Take a listen.
So following a bunch of sniffles, Governor Dean, you wrote on Twitter, notice Trump sniffing all the time. Coke user? Why did you go there?
Well, you can't make a diagnosis over the television. I would never do that. But he has some interesting... That is actually a signature of people who use cocaine. I'm not suggesting that Trump does, but...
Well, you are suggesting it, actually, in a tweet.
Well, no, I'm suggesting we think about it. Do I think at 70 years old he has a cocaine habit? Probably not. But, you know, it's something that I think it'd be interesting to ask him and see if he ever had a problem with that. I don't think this is a ridiculous idea. Something funny was going on with Trump last night. Do I think it's a cocaine? Probably not. But, you know, again, the sniffling, the grandiosity, the delusions, the pressured speech. You know, this guy has already proven himself to be unstable. The question is, why is he unstable?
Now, Jim, I'm not saying the guy's using cocaine. I'm just saying he shows all the signs of a guy using cocaine. And what we didn't have there is Dean essentially saying, well, if he just unloads some more medical records, we can put this all to rest. But I'm not saying that this is what's going on at all. It's just really interesting.
I'm not saying Howard Dean is using cocaine, Greg. At one point in the exchange, he says, I'm not suggesting that he does cocaine. I'm saying we should think about the possibility that he's doing cocaine, which is not the antonyms he seems to think of it. This is Howard Dean who, again, this is my, I feel like, you know, the only, an old man who remembers things that nobody else does. Howard Dean flirted with trutherism when he ran for president in 2003, 2004. He was a guy who was saying, I don't understand why Bush isn't releasing some of this information, but the most interesting rumor I heard is that the Saudis warned him. Now, we're never going to be able to prove that. Now, when you do that, you know, that's trutherism, right? There was never any evidence of that. And that's what Howard Dean does. I thought it was pretty interesting that the sheer amount of folks in the media who are not fans of Trump were like, whoa, 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 whoa. That's really out of line. The second kind of point is there is that, look, you know, for all the flaws of Donald Trump, as far as everyone knows and as far as anyone has seen, Donald Trump doesn't drink. He is a teetotaler. He has talked about the influence of his brother being an alcoholic and how that kind of saw, you know, that affected the way he saw alcohol. So the idea that Trump, you know, never touches alcohol but has a Coke habit, you know, I think some people are going to be a little skeptical of that. And then finally, the last piece of counter evidence there, Greg, if Trump had done cocaine before the debate, wouldn't he have more energy? Like, you can take that as a slam under, or just about it. Like, now, I haven't seen a lot of people on coke. Maybe I'm being influenced by Hollywood. I don't know. But generally, don't they come out kind of manic and wide-eyed and woo, you know? I very much doubt that. And I think it just kind of indicates what a sideshow freak Howard Dean has become.
Speaking of woo, it's interesting that a guy who said this 12 years ago is making cocaine allegations.
Not only are we going to New Hampshire, Tom Harkin, we're going to South Carolina and Oklahoma and Arizona and North Dakota and New Mexico. And we're going to California and Texas and New York. And we're going to South Dakota and Oregon and Washington and Michigan. And then we're going to Washington, D.C. to take back the White House. Yeah!
Jim, I'm not saying that Howard Dean has a problem with anything. I'm just saying we should think about it.
You know, we give him so much grief over that, Greg. It's just the PCP talking. I guess we have our ways of doing things, and Greg, Howard Dean has his meth. Methods.
Oh, fantastic. Jim.
Any week I can make you laugh like that is a good one.
So, that was beautiful.
Good wrap-up note there.
Beautiful. Talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to tune in again on Thursday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.